Welcome back to Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. We are counting down to 6 o'clock tonight as the weather continues to get worse and worse. Matt and I are going to need ice skates and skis in order to get home tonight. Did you bring yours with you?
Yeah, I've got them in the back of the car, so I should be all right, I think so.
All right. Well, I told you I had a hard time fitting into those things they made me wear during that cross-country skiing lesson back in 7th grade, and I've never been able to find a ski that fits since, so maybe I'll just make it a very interesting commute back home. I don't know. Well, that's what it's like up here in Northeast Ohio. We're going to go to the hotline now, all the way down to the state capitol. Ryan Mitchell is joining us on the hotline right now. Ryan, thank you as always for joining us, my friend. How are you?
Oh, good times as always to be with you guys. Glad to be along, and thanks for having me.
Well, I would imagine you're getting a lot of the same things down there that we are getting up here. What's it like down there in Columbus? Are you guys shutting down shop, or have the schools shut down already?
Yeah, a lot of things have. The district in which I live actually ended classes early and sent everybody home. And, of course, that means all the athletic stuff has basically been shut down for the schools, largely in central Ohio today. As expected, it started off as rain, and then things started to get icy, and then there's going to be snow on top of that. So it's a relatively dangerous situation. So folks are, for the scholastic stuff anyway, being told to stay home.
Probably not a bad idea. It's always better to err on the side of caution, and it really looks like it could get really nasty. We've been looking at the radar, and it continues to get worse, and it changes colors almost as if you're looking through the eyes of the predator. You see all kinds of different colors on that radar. So for all those that are out there tuned in right now, please make sure that you travel safely and give yourself a little bit of extra time. Well, I want to touch...
And cover yourself in mud.
That's right. Yeah.
That way won't be able to find you.
Either that or make sure you've got Arnold by your side. Or Carl Weathers.
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover, Carl Weathers, or, Jesse the Body Ventura, or Jesse the Mind Ventura.
Whatever. He ain't got time to bleed.
Greatest line in a movie ever, by the way.
Yeah. That's a classic 80s action flick, man. I love that. I love going back and watching that on a rare occasion. Well, I want to ask you about a few different things today. I want to begin with this. People in Cleveland are starting to go crazy because they feel like the Indians haven't made enough moves in the offseason. And, of course, the recent news, handed down about a day or so ago now, with Jay Bruce signing that 3-year, $39 million contract with the New York Mets. People are beginning to wonder, if they're not going to spend, who do they have that can replace the guys that they've lost? They replaced Carlos Santana via free agency by bringing in Yonder Alonso. They lost a couple of really good arms in that bullpen in Joe Smith and Brian Shaw. But without Jay Bruce in right field, some of the obvious names come to mind with Lonnie Chisenhall. People don't know what to expect out of Michael Brantley. But Ryan, I wanted to bring you on because you've seen a lot of these guys at the AAA level that could be potential replacements for a guy like Jay Bruce, or worst case scenario, if Michael Brantley's not healthy enough to play throughout the course of the entire season. Who are some of the guys that come to your mind immediately when you think about a good corner outfielder for the Tribe?
Well, when you look at the AAA level last year, guys that you could just immediately plug in, I'm not sure that there's a ton there. I mean, obviously we had Tyler Naquin, who's a guy that can play the outfield. The metrics don't like his defense a whole lot in a lot of ways, but he's had some success up there with the Indians, had a few really, really big moments. So he may be a guy who gets an opportunity. Another is possibly Richie Schaefer, who struck out a ton for the Clippers last year but has a lot of natural power. He hit 30 home runs. He has adjusted his swing, as so many other players are doing, to try and get more loft on balls in play to try and get him over the wall. So I think it is a legitimate question for Indians fans who's going to play in the outfield, because I don't know if Lonnie Chisenhall is an everyday guy or if he's a platoon guy. What do you do if Michael Brantley can't play? Well, you try and piece it together, because Greg Allen is not going to be major league ready to play. He was up there, near the end of the season. He can really fly, but I don't know that offensively he's going to be ready to go to the major league level. So it's definitely a concern, but let's also take a step back and say, oh, well, you got to replace Jay Bruce. You only had Jay Bruce for a small portion of the season last year and into the playoffs. So you didn't give up a ton for Bruce necessarily. You gave up some prospects. Who knows what prospects do, whether they pan out or not. So replacing Bruce is kind of a misnomer, because you didn't have him the whole season, and you played very well and won the division if you're the Cleveland Indians. So you hope Lonnie Chisenhall can play on a mostly everyday basis. You hope that Bradley Zimmer comes back to full health and plays very, very well in center field. And then, of course, you're hitching your wagon to Michael Brantley, and who knows what's going to happen there. Obviously, when healthy, he is a top-tier player, but you can't count on him being healthy because of the injury bug that he has undergone. I don't know what they want to do with Yandy Diaz either. He's going to be an interesting case. I think he's best served as a third baseman. He has not really looked comfortable in the outfield at all. And if he can get some loft to those hard-hit balls, Yandy's got arms as big as all outdoors. So if he can start to get some backspin on those line drives that he's elevating and get some carry, he can turn into a home run hitter. He didn't have any home runs in the majors last year. But I think that's probably what you're looking at for the outfield, unless they bring somebody in from the outside. But what they have shown so far is they don't have the financial wherewithal to go grab a top-tier free agent.
Ryan, I'm glad you brought up Yandy Diaz. That was going to be one of the guys that I brought up, only because I think we saw him, albeit for not a small sample size. I think there were enough at-bats there for us to get an idea as to what he can do. But you just mentioned something about him in the outfield. You mentioned he didn't look totally comfortable. I mean, do you think if they do put him out there, is he better suited to be in left or in right? And if he is out in the outfield, just because right now it looks like they're more comfortable putting Kipnis at second and then moving Ramirez back over to third, could he project in left or right? Do you think he's better in one position over the other?
Well, I think in that scenario, they're better off putting Kip in the outfield where he showed he can move around out there and then putting, you know, remember, Yandy came up as a second baseman. Not a great second baseman. And defensively, I think they're still looking for a spot for him. He showed, you know, particularly in that first go-around with the Indians, the ability to make tremendous plays at third base. But there are times when his mechanics get a little bit out of whack, and then you never know. His arm is tremendously strong. So that being the case, maybe right field is a place where he can utilize that arm and maybe keep some runners from taking advantage. He only played 3 games in the outfield for the Indians last year. For the Clippers, he had 30 games in the outfield, but it was almost exclusively left. So they didn't put him in right field much. So my guess is if they put him in the outfield, it would be in left where Michael Brantley obviously likes to roam if Brantley cannot go. But again, I think if you have Yandy up there because of his offensive potential, and maybe you put J-Ram back at second base and put Kip for those games, Jason Kipnis, in the outfield because he's a really good athlete and has great baseball sense.
Ryan, the Cleveland Indians, you mentioned earlier they've got a kid out there with a pretty heavy bat. I'm curious from your standpoint in the minor leagues, it seems like in the Major League Baseball, you see more guys going for that home run. Has it been sort of that same trend there in the minor leagues?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody knows you hit home runs, you get to the major leagues, and that's where the money is. The difference, you know, there's no bigger jump in talent level and lifestyle than from AAA to the major leagues. You know, in AAA, you're still riding buses. You're still, in a lot of times, eating sandwiches in the pregame and postgame spread. You get to the major leagues, and everything changes. So if you can hit the long ball, that's your ticket to the bigs. And you know, I did mention that you know, the Tribe have a guy in Richie Schaefer in the minor leagues who hit 30 home runs. He did revamp his swing. You know, looking forward to next year with Richie Schaefer, Nelly Rodriguez, Bobby Bradley, you know, Francisco Mejia, Eric Haas, all possibly on the Clippers team. They are going to hit a ton of home runs, but they are also going to strike out. That's some kind of a record for strikeouts because last year Richie Schaefer struck out 188 times. Nelly Rodriguez struck out 181 times. And those guys I mentioned further down the line all are, you know, 150-plus strikeout guys. So you're sacrificing, obviously, some contact and some on-base percentage for your slugging percentage numbers. And teams seem to believe in that, that, you know, if you can put the ball over the fence, there's no way to defend that. So they like the long ball, and a lot of minor leaguers are, in fact, retooling their swings to try and get more loft. And maybe they give up a little bit of contact and the strikeout numbers go up, but as long as they're hitting bombs, nobody cares.
We're talking with Ryan Mitchell with the Columbus Clippers and the Columbus Blue Jackets here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And I want to talk about some of the arms that you saw last year in Columbus as well. We saw some of them up here in Cleveland as well, but, you know, Those are two big losses in that bullpen, losing Brian Shaw, a guy that I think was tremendously underappreciated up here, especially if you followed the way people treated him on social media, and then Joe Smith as well. But, I mean, if you look at the way that pitching staff has been constructed over the years, it sure seems like they've got a lot of firepower. But were there some guys that maybe we didn't see last year that you think could have a chance to make an impact at the big league level this year?
Boy, that's such a tough question, because there are guys that succeed at the minor league level. You know, you think of a guy like Vinny Pastano and Josh Jeudy over the past years, Jenson Lewis, guys that really dominated at AAA, and they couldn't quite get to that next level at the major leagues. So you think about some of the guys that had success with the Clippers over the years. Lewis Head is a guy who's going to go to major league camp. Cole Sulzer had pretty good numbers. And Josh Martin is another guy that is a big, strong right-hander, kind of in the Zach McAllister mold, has a fastball that's kind of similar in its velocity. But there wasn't anybody in the Clippers bullpen last year that flat dominated. And if you don't dominate at the minor league level, it's hard to project somebody going to the majors and really carving things up. So, you know, we saw Tyler Olson. He had success for the Indians at the end of the year. He had a good season in Columbus, 34 appearances and a 321 earned run average. So that translated for him. He's going to be used in a lot of lefty-lefty situations. And replacing the guys that they lost is not going to be easy. As you mentioned, Brian Shaw probably needs two guys to replace what he has done for the Indians over the past several years. Joe Smith is, you know, you go back to that Jay Bruce thing. Yeah, you got to replace him because he was on the postseason roster and was there at the end of the year. But that's not a guy that you had all season long. You had others that are going to be in there. So I think the Indians, and relievers are such a volatile commodity anyway. You never know what you're going to get from a relief pitcher from year to year, which is why so few of them who aren't established closers get long-term deals, because the performance is so up and down. But I think if you see, I think one of the big keys for the Indians is going to be the growth of Zach McAllister. Can he get into that next tier of bullpen work? Can he be the setup guy and be consistent? Because if he can, Zach can throw every day or close to it. He can be a Shaw-type player. So his growth, I think, is something really key for everybody to watch out for.
Ryan, one of the reasons I love talking to you is because you bring both sports, not just baseball, but my first love as well, the game of hockey. And Columbus Blue Jackets taking on the Vancouver Canucks tonight. A team that's frankly struggled in the West. There's only one team worse than them in the West. There's only two teams worse than them overall. The other would be the Buffalo Sabres, who unfortunately the Columbus Blue Jackets lost to last night. Now, Ryan, I know the Blue Jackets have won two of their last three, but should I be worried about the way things are going here in this tight-knit metropolitan conference, because it doesn't seem like the Jackets are creating a whole lot of room between themselves and the other teams?
Well, no, they're not, but the same can be said for every other team in the Metro Division. There just isn't much in the way of separation. The Metro, I think, is the best division in the NHL. I don't know if it's tough to say, because you look from first to last, and there's 11 points of difference between Washington and the New York Islanders. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a playoff spot, both of the wild cards right now come from the Metro, the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes. The Hurricanes have 48 points, and the Islanders have 46. So everybody in the division is within 2 points of a playoff spot. That obviously makes things tougher on the teams in the Atlantic, and they just haven't played as well.
Is it
time to panic for the Jackets? We've had this conversation a lot this year when I've been on. Everybody wonders what's wrong, what can they do, but they're still right there. No matter what happens tonight, going into the 5-day break for the Jackets, they're going to be in second place in the Metro, but they do have to find a way to score more goals, because they're not scoring much, losing to a team like Buffalo, even though after the game, the Jackets players and John Tortorella said, hey, we're not going to hang our heads after this, it's on to the next one. But those are 2 points for the Jackets that you really, I think you got to come away with those, at least 1 point, even though it's a road game. And the Jackets right now have a -2 goal differential on the season. They've been outscored 124 to 122 so far in the year. So they do have to find a way to score, and that is a little bit of a concern.
How much of that do we place on these injuries? Cam Atkinson's out, Dubinsky's still out. I mean, there's some guys, Ryan Murray, still out on the defensive side. How much of that has to do with that?
Well, none of those guys were doing much of anything before they got hurt. So there's the two sides to that coin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They got Alexander Wenberg back last night, he didn't have a huge impact on the game. But with Wennberg and Atkinson and Dubinsky and Murray, those are guys who, even though they weren't scoring, and Murray's a defenseman who's not known as a scorer, but those other three guys, they weren't scoring, but they do a lot of the things that don't necessarily show up on a score sheet at the end of the game that help a team win. So when you miss those guys, you miss those things in addition to the scoring. So other players like Oliver Bjorkstrand have had to step up. Artemi Panarin has been a magician a lot of nights. They're getting scoring from the blue line with Werenski and Seth Jones. And Sergei Bobrovsky, despite a bad December, has been great this month. There was a goal. They lost 3-1 last night. One was an empty net goal. And the goal that turned out to be the game winner was just an absolute fluke. It was sent in along the boards, had a weird carom down near where the doors for the Zamboni are, and came. Sergei Bobrovsky went back to play it. It caromed off the boards right out in front of the net, and a Buffalo player was there for a wide-open net. So Bob really only gave up one goal last night. He has been tremendous. It's amazing to me that he didn't make the All-Star game. But the injuries, hopefully you start getting some of these guys, Atkinson and Dubinsky, back after January, which is a light month. The Jackets only have 10 games this month. But certainly getting those guys back, whether or not they're scoring, is going to make your experience level better, and a lot of things hopefully will start falling into place.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'd take Bob over Holtby any day of the week, but that's my personal preference, I suppose. I just wanted to ask you about the game tonight, Vancouver. How important are these 2 points? I know it's always important to get the win, but you mentioned that 5-day break. Then you get Dallas. You go into Vegas, where right now nobody can win. I mean, this seems like a pretty big 2 points here tonight.
Well, as you said, they all are, but heading into this break, this stretch of 4 games, they had a back-to-back and then some time off and then another back-to-back with last night and tonight. And they were able to get a shootout win against Florida, and then they were down 2-0 against the Toronto Maple Leafs with 5 minutes to go, and they found a way to get 2 goals in the last 5 and then win it in overtime. So they were able to garner 2 points in each one of those games. Losing to Buffalo in regulation yesterday, not getting either one of those points, I think does put an extra emphasis on this game. You got to come away with points. You're at home. They've played very well at home. Vancouver, as you mentioned, is not very good. We'll get to see Sam Gagne, who was so key to the success of the power play for the Jackets last year in the first half of the season. But they're going to shake his hand, say, hey, good to see you, and then try and kick his butt right all over the ice. Because they do need these points. You want to go into this break feeling good about yourself. Get away from hockey for a little bit, come back refocused. But if you lose to 2 of the 3 worst teams in the NHL heading into the break, it's going to be hard to hold your head up.
Very good stuff, my friend William. We always appreciate the time. Hopefully you and yours are able to stay indoors and out of this mess that's wreaking havoc on us as we speak up here with all the snow on the ice. Ryan, always a pleasure, my friend. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
All righty, that is Ryan Mitchell of the Columbus Clippers and the Columbus Blue Jackets talking some baseball and some hockey with us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to step aside and take a break. We'll do that now, but Matt and I will return after this on AM 930 WEOL.